various engineers and scientists are developing and refining new energy sources, from wind farms and hydrogen fuel cells to more exotic gizmos, like space-based solar panels that beam microwaves down to Earth. Daniel Kamen runs the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Lab at the University of California, Berkeley. He told Anne Strainchamps about the latest developments.
The most exciting thing going on is that a whole variety of things that were technically feasible or were theoretically feasible a number of years ago are now practical today. So, for example, fuel cells, which are essentially a battery run backwards. You put in hydrogen on one side and oxygen on the other, and you get electricity and warm water. That's it. Fuel cells are now at a point where they're being deployed in buses and in cars starting in the year 2002, and they are already available for homes or small businesses, and the number of companies working on them is growing rapidly. One of the amazing things with fuel cells is that they transform how we think about energy. So they are a very critical technology. By transform energy, what I mean is that in the past, you generate electricity, and you have to use it right away. It's on the market. It's sort of an instantaneous commodity. Fuel cells allow you to generate electricity and also to store it, because what you do is you produce hydrogen, move it around, and then use that as the input, your fuel, later on. So it transforms this kind of immediate supply and demand market.
Wait, so put this in more practical terms. I mean, how might I, 3 years from now, be using fuel cells in my life?
Well, let me give you two examples. One is that instead of your furnace in your basement, you could have a fuel cell, which is about the size of your furnace, and that can generate far more energy than your home needs. So then on one hand, you can generate that power with no waste products. You get warm water that you might use for washing as the only other byproduct except for electricity. But it also means that you could sell power back to the grid. That provides tremendous amount of flexibility in what's called a distributed generation sense.
But where's the fuel cell getting the energy? You said you use hydrogen.
You use hydrogen. So in the same way that you have natural gas either piped to your home or fuel oil delivered to your home in canisters, you would have the hydrogen delivered to your home. Or you could make it yourself if you had, for example, solar panels on your roof or in a rural area, a windmill. And that can basically generate the hydrogen through electrolysis, just generating it from water. Now, that means that the fuel is very abundant. Right now, the only hurdle is that it's a little bit too expensive, but the prices have been dropping dramatically. But let me give you the other example of where fuel cells can just totally transform how we think about energy. Fuel cells are being developed right now for vehicles. And a fuel cell car typically needs a power plant that's 20 to 30 kilowatts in size. The amount of power that you use in your home is probably 2 to 5 kilowatts, meaning the max amount of power you need to run everything in your home on a maximum day when everything's on. If you have your fuel cell vehicle and you then drive it to work and leave it turned on and sell power back all day long while at work, then hop in your fuel cell car and drive home, plug it into your house, and generate the power you need at night, you then have this remarkable device that provides distributed power where you are.
But this is predicated on the idea that hydrogen supplies somehow are going to be made as abundant as natural gas is right now and as readily available as gas from gas stations is.
That's right. Well, in fact, hydrogen is in some ways an easier quantity to move around and deal with than gasoline. Hydrogen is the most abundant element on Earth and in the universe. It is an element that can be stored in tanks. It can be stored in gaseous form. It can be pumped into different kinds of solids, like graphite, and it can be stored in that solid and then brought out later on. And the other feature about hydrogen is that we already have the infrastructure to move it around. Many universities and laboratories and some companies use hydrogen in all sorts of processes. So right now, hydrogen is tanked around in trucks, in pipelines, and is sent to various destinations. It has some big advantages over gasoline. One feature about gasoline is, for example, that it can light on fire and burn. Hydrogen can too, but the conditions under which hydrogen is explosive or can burn are actually ones that are in some ways easier to control than gasoline.
So this is a possibility. Is there any sign that anybody is actually moving toward this?
There is. Right now, as I said, the fuel cells are about a factor of 5 to 10 too expensive to directly compete with existing technologies. But 5 years ago, they were a factor of 100 times too expensive. So things are changing rapidly. And what we're already seeing is a whole manner of hydrogen associations, planning operations in the US and Europe and Japan. Already Iceland plans to convert their economy entirely to a hydrogen-based economy because they already have geothermal energy, which they will then use to generate hydrogen. They will then use for vehicles, buildings, et cetera. So we're seeing the beginnings of that transition. And there's sort of no more fundamental shift in how we think about energy than moving towards this hydrogen economy. Essentially, 100 years ago, we had a solid fuel economy. We burned coal. Then we moved into a liquid economy where we did oil. And now we're seeing the beginnings of a gas economy with natural gas. And eventually, this hydrogen transition looks like one of the really promising, exciting ways to get clean energy.
Tell me about a couple of other things. What's happening with solar power these days? Because for a while, you know, in the 80s, you saw solar panels on some houses, and some people were really committed to solar power, but it remained kind of a fringe technology. Is that changing?
That's changed as dramatically as the fuel cell case has changed. Right now, we're seeing in California that has some very generous rebates from the state government if you put solar panels on your roof, a system where you can put the system on, get a tax break, which is essentially half the cost of the system, generate your power for your home, and do it with a payback time for that system that's under 5 years. Now, 5 years ago, the payback time, if you put a solar panel system on your roof to generate all the power for your home, was more than a decade, and in many cases, more than 2 decades. It's already come down by a factor of 4. That's a dramatic change.
It also used to be that if you wanted to do that, you had to be really committed to it, and you had to know something about the technology yourself and be prepared to go up there and, you know, monkey around with your solar panels if there was a problem. That's different, too?
That's also different. Now we are seeing companies out there that install your solar system, that maintain it, just the same way that you call up a company to have your furnace or your air conditioner managed. The other big change in solar is that the types of materials to make efficient solar panels have also transformed. You can now buy solar panels that look like and act like roof shingles, so you can actually have your roof itself generating power. And we're seeing this not just in developed countries. We're seeing developing countries like Kenya that have more solar panels per capita than any country on the earth. And we're seeing that transition taking place so that last year, for example, more people bought solar panels in Kenya than were hooked up to the national grid. So it's not just a developed country phenomenon. It's taking place all over.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay, what about wind?
Well, wind has undergone a transition that has shocked a lot of people. Wind is now cost competitive and in some cases cheaper than any of the new alternatives, meaning it is cheaper than coal, cheaper than oil, and is getting down in some cases to be the same cost as nuclear power, leaving the whole nuclear waste issue aside. And the big change is that wind is now a technology that we understand how to not only make the windmills themselves much more efficient, but also to make wind farms very efficient so that we're getting a lot of power out, not just dribs and drabs, 20, 30 kilowatts here and there, but hundreds of megawatts of power out of wind farms so they can effectively replace fossil fuel power plants.
Well, so far we've been talking about clean energy alternatives that are really very close to being put into practice. What about if we look farther ahead? You know, what's still in the laboratory that scientists are working on now?
Well, some of the neat things that we can think about down the road are everything from space-based power systems. And what I mean by that is solar panels and collection systems in space where we don't have the loss of energy as it passes through the atmosphere. Right now, if you put a solar panel on the surface of the Earth, you will have lost anywhere from 20 to 50 or more percent of the initial energy that was outside the atmosphere just because the atmosphere attenuates it. If you put the panels in space, you generate a lot more power, and there are laboratories in Japan and Germany working on systems to beam that energy back down to Earth as microwaves. That's a system where we could have, you know, essentially unlimited area for energy collection, beaming it back down very safely. Microwaves are used all the time to transmit signals and energy all around right now. That's a system that has some very attractive long-term potential. And of course, the big lurking long-term energy source is fusion power.
Boy, the last time a lot of us heard about fusion, it was sort of cold fusion, and there was a big debacle, and it turned out not to be the dream everybody thought it was. Fusion's still around?
That's right. Now, cold fusion is a whole different story, and it's in fact largely an unfortunate story of some mismanagement and some deception in science. Cold fusion is sort of some mythical transformation in a test tube. Fusion, as it's being developed right now, is a much larger scale technology, where there's two basic competing ways to do it. One is to use very strong magnets to constrain a plasma, a high-temperature gas, that you then ram together to get the fusion energy out. The other competing technology is a laser-based system, where you have a little pellet of fuel and a high-intensity laser beam that crashes into it that generates the force to push the atoms together to get fusion energy out. Now, fusion hit a milestone 2 years ago. At the Tokamak reactor in Princeton, they were able for a brief split second to generate more energy than they put into the magnets to keep it constrained. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but it's a real quantum leap in understanding and ability to manage the fusion system.
Is the idea about fusion that one day, instead of having nuclear reactors, we just have fusion reactors?
That's right. Now, that actually brings up an interesting point about fusion. The amount of energy that you can generate from basically smashing together hydrogen, again, this wonderfully common fuel source, is that the energy available in that is far greater than we get from fission, from current nuclear reactors. Fusion has the feature, though, that we don't yet know if it has the same scalable property, as I mentioned, for fuel cells. Hmm. Right now, we're looking at fusion systems that are going to be quite large because you've got to have big magnets or big lasers. We don't know if we can make fusion systems as small as would run your home, as large as would run a big power plant. We suspect they're going to be larger systems, but that means they could be part of a backbone of what's called baseload generation, with distributed wind and solar and fuel cells as the things that make up the differences for individual homes. And so these things all have to be thought of as a package. You can't just say, our future in 50 years will be all solar, all wind, all fusion. It's going to be a combination.
Daniel Kamen directs the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Laboratory at the University of California, Berkeley. He talked with Anne Strangechamps.